You've been listening to Kébu's A Different Nature. Tonight, music of the French composer Francis Daumont. And for the last half hour or so, we've been listening to his piece Chronique de la Lumière, Chronicles of the Light. I'm Andy Hosh. I hope you've enjoyed the program. Different Nature comes your way each Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. And I do believe next week, DJ Whatthe will be in here. So never know what to expect. It's coming up on the hour of 10 o'clock. This is KBOO Portland. Stay tuned after these announcements. Talking Earth is up next.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of a benefit concert for Standing Rock Legal Defense taking place Wednesday, March 22nd at O'Connor's Vault in Portland.
This evening of folk and protest music features the Road Sodas, Gary Furlow and the Loafers, and Woodlander.
This is a 21 and over event.
Again, that's a benefit concert for Standing Rock Legal Defense taking place Wednesday, March 22nd at O'Connor's Vault, 7850 Southwest Capitol Highway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Please join us on Saturday, March 25th for an Archives Database Edit-a-thon and party. This event will run from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. We are recruiting current and past KBOO volunteers and listeners who hold knowledge of KBOO's 49-year history. And we are recruiting archivists, librarians, and any other person that enjoys information seeking and data entry to document this collective knowledge. This event is free and open to the public, but we need you to register so we can plan for the event. Find out more by emailing archive@kboo.fm or online at kboo.fm/editparty2017.
You are listening KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial. This is Talking Earth. My name is Patrick Bocard. This program has been made possible by KBOO members and a grant from Crystal Clear Supplements, providing nootropics, dietary supplements, and botanicals to the local community and patrons on the internet. Crystal Clear Supplements is located at 3211 Southeast Milwaukee Avenue in Portland, just south of Powell Boulevard by the Aladdin Theater. If there's more information at crystalclearsupplements.com. And I am here in the studio tonight with fellow Portland poet Leah Noble Davidson. She's been writing for a long time, actually. I will probably bring up the Church of Poetry later in the program, not very much now. She is also the mother of a curious 10-year-old, a bouncy Bernese, and also takes care of a bouncy Bernese mountain dog named Pepper. And she has two books of poetry, both published by University of Hell Press. Is that correct, Leah?
Yes.
And you wanted to start off with something out of your first book, correct?
Yeah.
Which is called Poetic Scientifica.
Yeah. So I've written two books of poetry so far. And the first one was a one poem book with a 120 page glossary. And I thought it might be fun if I sort of explain that. Words are sort of an artifact of thought. And I decided to write a whole book of poetry trying to play with the idea that poets can frame a thought, but maybe can't actually define a thought. So I thought it might be fun to write a whole book of poetry where I defined the emotion of a word. So I'm going to read you the first poem in the book, and what I want you to do is, and it's intentionally written sort of Emily Dickinson-esque, it's not modern poetry. And I would like you to listen to this poem and then pick a word out of it, and then I'll read the poem that defines the word, okay?
All right, sounds good.
So this is the first poem, and then there's 112 poems afterwards to define each word. So first poem, O careful readiness, O cinders in the jaw, you fountains of bird song and velvet ropes, aspiring Marylands, maybe, I covet you, the way you would have me do so. Climbing into our story, we build your image together, a personal love, an echo of the anecdotes strangers tell each other. I cannot hate you for being the bathtub I drain my culture into, for shining myself into so many lights. Okay, so pick a word.
I picked anecdotes before you actually started reading, so I don't know if you want to consider that a valid one, or should we go with another word that I picked while you were reading?
Tell me the word you picked while I was reading.
Bathtub.
Bathtub, okay. So what I'm doing right now is I'm going through the book page by page, and all of the poems are in the order of the first poem.
And that one's on page 87 because it's near the end of the poem.
True story. All right, so this is my emotional definition of the word bathtub. My mother taught me how to prepare for that kind of misery. I would feel it coming on. Knew to go to the store and buy vegetables and juices and crackers. I could get there and back in time to get into the tub, crawl inside, and rock in the water. So after writing this book, I decided that my definition of each of these words was a little surface level. So I decided to write a whole book about one word.
And that would be your book-length poem, Door. Is it true it's an actual book-length poem, or is it a series of poems?
It's totally a series of poems.
Okay, so I kind of misinterpreted that a little bit.
It's got sort of four different directions it comes from, and the book is meant to be a labyrinth, and because I do so much experience design and service design, I wrote it for rereadability, so it continues to turn over and over and over again on itself.
And I would argue it's very much modern.
It's really modern, yeah.
Yes, it's kind of prose poetry, but it comes with footnotes and...
Yeah, and quotes in it. Mostly based on the fact that when I started to, I spent a year trying to write about the word door. And when I got there, I realized that essentially I couldn't define the word door no matter how many poems I wrote. And the book should really, really be titled Poems I Wrote for a Year While Thinking About the Word Door. Because even adding quotes and adding footnotes and trying to describe all the layers of that word, I could never actually get there. Words are really deep.
Well, they can be, but you kind of get into the varieties of doors that various people or peoples have, you know, concerned themselves with. Doors of perception.
Mm-hmm.
The doors that Monty Hall will try to get you to pick the wrong one.
Yes.
Which was a very interesting poem because that faked me out, actually. I thought you were talking Marilyn Monroe wrote an article about it, but no.
No, just a woman named Marilyn.
Yes, and you have a thing about Marilyn's too, supposedly.
I do. I have a total obsession with Marilyn Monroe.
Okay, and there's a lot of other people who do, so it's nothing. That's not a big deal.
I thought it was funny that Marilyn Monroe is a personality that we see an image and we see Marilyn, but she was made up of 60 designers and all the people who taught her to be Marilyn. And so that's sort of where my obsession goes, is the concept of an icon made by other people.
I'm thinking about how I don't know. That might not be a door you want to go down.
Surely not right now.
No. And both books come with glossaries, correct?
Or? They do. Well, one, the poems are the glossary, and the second book, there's a
definition.
Yeah, the definition of a door, and then there's all of the different, the origin of the door and door idioms in the back, which were things that inspired the book.
Was there a poem or two you wanted to read out of your new book?
Oh, of course, I'd love to. All right. So the book opens. The book opens and closes with the same poem, I was also obsessed with sort of doors of perception and time. And there was this old Native American concept where the future is actually something you fall back into because you can't see it. And what you can see is the past. So the past is in front of you. That totally blew my mind. So think about it. It's crazy. Okay. So the first poem is, he goes and doesn't and does. She's fine and isn't and is. No one sees it coming. Everyone saw it coming. Time, a backward fall, an unavoidable future, both opening and closing forever. And then the book has four storylines, and one of those lines is a relationship that continues to open and close over and over and over again. Do you want another poem?
Actually, yeah, sure. I didn't know if you had one that you wanted, if you wanted to read Closed. Well, that's right at the end of the book, so you might want to stay away from it.
Closed is the same poem.
It is, but it's but it's closed and not open. Okay, I'm being silly. I wrote several down. I was thinking, sure, let's make a deal.
Okay.
Which we already kind of talked about that, but yes.
Let's make a deal. Okay.
And how do you read the footnotes?
So.
Out loud.
Well, I suppose you'll hear it. I'm sure that you know what page Let's Make a Deal is on.
It is on page 105.
Fantastic.
I also wrote down the numbers.
Thank you. Okay. So Let's Make a Deal. You already explained that this is based on the Monty Hall problem. And so there's a quote at the beginning, and it says, will you stick with what's behind door number 2, or will you switch to door number 3? The poem. Best odds dictate that you always switch. After they show you the goat, you switch. A woman figured that out, but it's still true. And there's a footnote, and it says, Monty Hall problem. Behind two doors are two goats. Behind a third door is a car. Marilyn answered it in her column, and after her solution appeared in Parade magazine in 1991, around 10,000 readers, including nearly 1,000 with PhDs, wrote the magazine, most of them claiming she was wrong. She wasn't. Look it up.
Yeah, and that, I actually looked that up. And I have to say, I actually disagree with her, but, and it was her last name, it's not Marilyn Monroe, it's Marilyn, no. What is her last name? Oh my God, I spaced it.
I spaced it too.
Well, we'll find it out by the end, figure it out by the end. I will look it up by the end of the show, and we'll have her name, and perhaps she's actually correct and I'm just wrong. I mean, technically, I think the thing to do is to pretend to switch and don't, so you fake Monty Hall out. But I was paying way too much attention to mathematics and stuff like that, and that's not the point. Of course. Was there another one you wanted to read? Because I do have like a bunch.
Tell me which ones you want
to
hear.
The hyperlink was a door because I found that very amusing to myself.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately, I kind of picked the amusing ones as opposed to the ones that are about the relationship so much.
That's okay.
I mean, there are ones about your son. There's, yeah, kind of goes all over the place.
It absolutely does. It's about the word door. So, my caveat is I have to read this is a set of sister poems, and there are a variety of these in here.
Okay.
So the first one's called, I Thought a Hyperlink Was a Door, But Apparently It's Not. And the poem goes, it's an address you insert into a box, which is also called a field, but not like with farmers, it's like opportunity. You knock and something opens. It's not a door, he says, it's a phone number. Insert here, speed dial, and favorites. Because there's a language the internet speaks, and if you're watching Netflix, your computer speaks like 65 billion languages or million or extensions. So like number 50 is your internet, and number 53 is a question like Alice might ask Bob about cookies. But if Carl's on the phone, Alice might apologize. Insert here. I wish I had a key. And then there's a footnote, and it says, on one side is your recipe, and on the other side is a computer trying to make cookies, apparently.
Yes, it's that's how they get into your... It is a door, because it's it opens on your computer.
Right, and so I was having a conversation with these really nerdy guys who were like, no, a hyperlink is totally not a door. And so I wrote that poem, and then the sister poem is called Door Jam, which is the title of a Kelsey Grammer episode. So there's a quote at the top. You'll notice there's a lot of quotes in here. The quote says, there are things known and there are things unknown, and in between are the doors of perception. That's by Aldous Huxley. Poem. Click here and you'll get to an old episode from Frasier, season 10, episode 11, Kelsey Grammer. See how you go to Seattle without ever leaving your pajamas. And there's a footnote, and the footnote says, seems like a door to me.
Huh.
Do you have another request?
There was another ones that actually match, I think. Do most of the sister poems face each other?
Yes.
Okay, so I think I wrote down glassdoor.com because that was amusing, but then I know we've never met, actually. That is kind of amusing, but it's also kind of unfortunately how, I don't know. I don't know if that's a metaphor for something else or not.
I know we've never met is sort of a commentary on the way we fall in and out of love with things. You want to read that? You want me to read that one or the glass door one?
I'd prefer I know we've never met, but.
Okay, absolutely. I know we've never met, but. Insert here, two knocks, no answer. Poem. Remember that time someone gave me your last book for my birthday and it was dark and brutal and not quite as good as your first book? Because when I read your first book, you were still new to me and you were real and soft and not so obvious. Remember how I could just think of a poem from your first book and I'd start tearing up, sobbing even? Even if I was in the shower, and then I felt like a cliche, but a really, really clean one. Remember when I felt out of love with you after I read your last book and into love with Dorothea Lasky? Because she had really nice glasses and a way of saying balloon that made my toes curl. And I went home and put her books on the table in my bathroom where all my best books go. And I put your book beside Bukowski's book on the shelf in the living room and all your ink words fell to the bottom of the page. And you didn't call me or anything, but now when someone asks me about poetry, I say, hey, have you ever heard of Dottie Lasky? I'm going to read her poetry forever.
That is totally how, like, and sometimes you're like in the middle of a book and you just put it down and you're no longer in love with it.
Yeah.
They blew it somehow.
Yeah.
You know? And sometimes you just put it down and then like 3 years later you pick it up and it's amazing. You just didn't give it a chance the first time around.
Agreed. Sometimes you have some growing to do before you really get something.
No, sometimes it's that, and sometimes it's I don't know. I mean, I also feel like people feel like you have to read a certain book in order to become a writer. Like you have to have read Catcher in the Rye, or you can't actually be a writer. Someone said that to me a long time ago. and On the Road is funny. It's On the Road is one that I didn't read for the longest time, and then I read it, and I really liked it, actually. It's not The Suburbans. It's another one of his Kerouac's books that has his version of Gregory Corso in it, and he's major in it. To get back to Catcher in the Rye, which I'm not really a big fan of, actually, because I didn't read it at the right time. You got to read it when you're a 16-year-old whiny male, I think. And unfortunately for that book, in terms of my growth, I read John Fowle's The Magus before that, which is, you know, made for 25-year-old whiny males, and that one is much better, in my opinion. Other people disagree with me and told me I'm wrong, but I felt like there's way more to that one than Catcher in the Rye. But But that's just, I don't know. It's just sometimes to each their own. Sometimes people just have a difference of opinion. Okay. So it's entirely possible someone who has never read like Emily Dickinson or Walt Whitman is writing the great poems of our age somewhere, and we're, you know, we'll find out later.
Well, I mean, Walt Whitman, Leaves of Grass comes from the concept of when you would cut the edge off of a book to make it nice and flat, they would call the leftover paper grass. So even Walt Whitman was true.
We got to think of the right term for that, but that's okay.
Sorry.
That's right. But the thing is that I did not realize that. I thought it was definitely a reference leaves like page leaves, but I thought it was also a reference to that we become grass, that we die and become.
That's a similar way to how writing, we all interpret whatever we need to.
Yeah.
And writers create a frame, and whether or not what they intended is what we read, it still becomes its own thing.
No, that's definitely true. And to get back to Ashley, to go off slightly off subject, but we're really close, since you mentioned the way that books were being made, and I guess they still make them that way, I believe, right?
Yeah, they cut the edge off, yes.
Okay. You actually have worked on editing jobs on other poets for people at University of Hell.
Yeah, and Derek Brown from Right Bloody, yeah.
Oh, you've been working for Right Bloody as well?
I just Derek.
Just Derek, okay. No, that's the, that's something that, do you think that's fueled, like, the way your style's changed a little bit? Like, you kind of use, like, the page in much, like, it's gone from the Emily Dickinson, it's not, I mean, I guess that's not really, I mean, there are some prose poetry in Poetic Scientifica, too, but it's not, like, heavily into that. But you kind of seem to be using the page and using footnotes, and it's kind of interesting to me. And it's like that's always, typography has always interested me. I've always been a sucker for Guillaume Apollinaire, and I always kind of had a little period where, like, my writing of poetry involved writing stuff and then going to the computer pod at like 1 a.m. and typing it up so it had look weird on the page and no one had ever printed because you don't realize that it's expensive to actually use more than two types or typefaces in a book.
I think that part of my background for creating such a crazy second book has a lot more to do with how lucky I am to work with University of Hell. I think that Greg, the head editor of University of Hell and the man who started it, he's been so kind and given me so much freedom that for good or for bad, he let me go down the rabbit hole as much as I wanted. And it meant that I got to play and I got to write two experiments. And that's what both of these books are.
So you have another experiment you're working on?
I am.
Is there any hints as to where it might go? I mean, you don't have to actually give it away, but
it's about a topic from a variety of perspectives.
So kind of like Rashomon, except in printed material. Or not quite. That's narrative, though.
Yeah, that's much more narrative. I think when you're explaining something, you explain it differently based on your audience, right?
Yeah.
So this is an exploration of different audiences about a similar topic.
Okay, yeah. Cool. So, all right, yeah, I'm just kind of curious how that, I mean, if I'll have to wait for when you when you publish it. And in the meantime, feel free to go out there and buy Leah's two books from your local independent bookstore, Poetic Scientifica, and Door, the most recent book, which I can affirm is actually, I bought a copy from Powell's. So if they don't have one, you should complain, Leah, because they might have run out.
They have several copies. I got to read at Powell's.
Yes.
Yeah, it was great.
That was back, that was a little while ago.
I think a month ago.
Was it a month ago? Okay, I ran into Greg and I was like, oh yeah, I wanna have Leah come on the show, and then I kind of just slacked and I felt like it was a while more than.
You didn't slack as much as you thought you did.
Okay, I guess not. Find both of her books out at Powell's and other bookstores as well. Plenty of independent bookstores out there.
Absolutely.
Did you want to read another one? Not my choice, another one of yours?
Oh, sure.
That you want to pick?
Thank you. Well, here's one that I've heard does all right. It's called Getting Your Foot in the Door Again. And there's a quote, of course. It's by Anne Sexton from Locked Doors. It says, however, there is a locked room up there with an iron door that can't be opened. It has all your bad dreams in it. It is hell. Then it says, insert here your 70th application. Poem. When you go out for coffee, open your wallet slowly and like you never think about it. Hide the food stamps card. Offer to buy his drink. It's nothing really. Talk about how busy you are, but you know, you're always looking for new opportunities. Cross your legs and touch your hair. No, go back. Wash your hair twice and pick the friendlier heels. You don't want to seem too businessy. Show up early and have the table ready. Walk him to the counter, cash in hand. Ask him what he's up to. Talk about this amazing book you're reading on neuroscience. No, go back. Read a book about strategy. Learn the phrase actionable insights. Get over it. Decide the word is passé. Wash your hair 3 times. Choose the blue dress. It's loyal, but you'll have to fix the hem. Fix the hem. Buy your coffee before he gets there. It's a power move. Own your space. Lean in. Touch your chin. Keep your eyebrows and your voice in check. Tell him you love freelance work, but you miss. What do you miss? Don't say money or safety. Don't say you're just tired. Don't think of crumbling or cubicles or the word consumer. Stop thinking of what not to think. The market man is looking at you, and why don't you want this? Who wouldn't want this? And aren't you lucky? Aren't you a genius and needed? And don't you need a new dress? Go back, go back, go back.
And that's one of those relationship poems.
It's a relationship with work.
With work. Oh, yes. Duh. I was reading. I went through the wrong door. Sorry. Nothing to see here. Bye.
Someone's been planning ahead.
No, I wasn't planning ahead. I went through the wrong door.
Let's see. One of your favorite ones was the other one that you were talking about. It's nearly a sister poem, right?
Glass Door.
Yeah, it's also about work.
That is definitely about work.
So for those of you who don't know what Glass Door is, do you know?
There's a helpful footnote at the bottom that helped me out with that.
Yeah, so Glass Door is an American website where employees and former employees anonymously review companies and their management. So this is called glassdoor.com. And we just read the footnote first. So there's a quote, and it says, "The world is full of people who have never, since childhood, met an open doorway with an open mind," by E.B. White. Poem. My favorite part is how she was 29 minutes late because she had to write me an email about my needing to be on time.
Huh. No names, though.
No names. I'll never tell. I'll never tell.
I had another one I was going to ask you to read. Oh. It's a whole bunch of...
So the book has some hallway poems in it. So while you're thinking of what you wanted me to read, I'll get to the hallway poem. And these are sort of these moments that are in the right now. And they link to different pieces and bits and pieces in the book, but they're not about doors. they kind of touch on the emotional in-betweens. And this is none of them are titled. Everyone you know wants to do terribly drunken things to you, and you don't need to be told, which is why you straddle the bar stool, legs a soft white gasp, laugh your back into the crowd. I pretend not to be jealous of your dress, the way it holds you, how you finger it in casual conversation. You little salty toy, I dare you to have a secret and keep it.
That's a crowd favorite, isn't it?
It is. You know, I don't have a lot of sexy poems, but when I do, I like to share them.
Yeah, I don't know. I've gotten over all of that.
You're married, man.
I'm done with. Oh, I'm married, but I'm also done with poetry. I've been writing fiction. One of these days, I'll actually get some of it published. when I actually, I don't know. This election has sidetracked me. Let's just put it that way.
It really got me too. I had a hard time writing for a little while.
Well, no, my problem is I had two cycles of stories I was working on that I should be just rewriting and finishing and sending out, and I started writing another cycle that has nothing to do with the other two, and because of who we elected, and it was, why do I allow him having that much control over what I do? That was just foolish. Yeah, but I could just type, you know, get that one edited and send it out, and a rejection slip. That would be awesome. Shut the front door. Oh, wait. Oh, I don't know. Well, there's a little, as Captain America says sometimes, language.
Should I, I could try to not say the language.
Oh, it's technically part of the poem.
Oh, okay, never mind.
So then it's okay. It's part of the footnote.
Oh.
Yeah, but I mean,
I don't know, you'll have to hit the profanity delay button again.
Oh, I didn't do that. What are you talking about? Yeah, how about I read it?
Okay.
All right, I will try not to mess it up.
Okay.
Shut the front door. Okay. All right, shut the front door. Board with a hole for a handle, a lock and a knob, flap, clap, up the wall, Jim Morrison all, low, hi-fi. I'm already messing it up, aren't I? Pulling the velvet blonde to the ground by her hair. Nico was pretty, deaf in one ear, and racist. She traveled extensively. And what the bleep was poetry after meeting Warhol and desert writing? Mescaline, of course, and bloody thumb bonds. They stormed, tumbled, and tequila. He died, and then she did in 1998. Excuse me, I'm just...
In 1998, heart attack on a bike. She was going to go buy weed.
Yeah, 1988.
Oh,
yeah, no, I'm the one that messed it up. I'm doing time travel on your poem. Her daughter, Ari, remembered that, wrote it down, and people bought the book. Later, Tina Brown, Salona, probably mispronounced her name, didn't I? Put Kevin Killiam in a poem, and no one cared more than he did. Spelling bee champ, not racist, married, Dottie Bellamy. Two names, not dead yet. And there's a footnote. See, also, shut the bleep up, get out, and I can't even. Yeah, I don't think it's supposed to be quite as funny as it is when I read it weird, when I mess it up reading. Oh, next poem is Glass Ceiling.
Oh, yeah. Okay, Glass Ceiling. There's a lot of work poems you're picking, huh?
Just, that's my life, work.
Glass Ceiling, and there's a quote. It says, my poem walked through the door. I couldn't ignore. She was Mexican, an older woman, short and 9 months pregnant. She asked if she could clean the windows, anything. That's by L.K. Thayer from My Poem Walked Through the Door. And the poem goes, what'll he do when she makes money? Why, he'll get a maid, of course. I do Let's Bang?
Yes.
I think you liked that one.
I like the book, so yeah. There are also two poems that have the same title.
I don't care if you want to live somewhere else. I just want you to sleep in my bed every night forever. I have all this love and nice sheets. That's the poem, by the way.
That's not the whole poem, is it? I thought there was a footnote at least. No. There's no footnotes for that, huh? No. Oh. I'm double checking that. I don't believe it. You know, everyone out there, you're going to have to buy this book to check and see if there are footnotes to that poem. Oh, it's right next to Let's Make a Deal. How appropriate. I should have realized that. No, you're right. Sometimes I wonder if men and women really suit each other. Perhaps they should just live next door and visit now and then. Katharine Hepburn. Is that from a movie?
Katharine Hepburn said so many quotes that I can't tell when and where she said them anymore.
No.
They're just so good.
Yes. Someone else who's interesting, E.L. Bernays. Never heard of him before.
Oh, he's fantastic. So he's sort of the father of American advertising. He was hired in the East Coast when so for instance, he's the reason why you think that eggs and bacon are breakfast for like American breakfast. He was hired by farmers on the East Coast, and he created the concept of the American breakfast being bacon and eggs. Another time, he was asked by cigarette companies to sell cigarettes to women, and he labeled them Liberty Sticks, and then hired some photographers to go outside a women's parade, and then handed out cigarettes to women in a Liberty parade, and then took pictures and called them Liberty Sticks and started selling cigarettes to women.
And he was related to Freud.
He was Freud's nephew.
That's just crazy that the mind control chief of North America was related to Freud, in my opinion. Well, that's really not what he would want to call himself, but
right. And then
I got my own bias against that.
And then Freud was an intern for this guy named Mesmer. Which is where you get the term mesmerized.
Oh, I know Mesmer. Oh, man, that guy's creepy. Yes. That guy was very creepy. I didn't realize that Freud was an intern for him.
Yeah. He was really into magnets. What are they?
Mesmer? No, he wasn't.
Yes, he was. He was really into magnets, and he would circle people around these big magnets, chanting the same words over and over and over again, because he said that magnets could heal you.
Didn't he also do the whole, like, they would, you know, lie women down and touch them, and they...
Whoa.
No, I'm serious. There's like a...
I wouldn't put it past
it. That might have been someone else, and it was a mesmerism craze later on, but it was during the Victorian era.
Definitely during the Victorian era, yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking that might... Yeah, I don't know. I'm like a little...
My knowledge of Mesmer might be from one area, and yours might be from another.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like the David Cronenberg version of Mesmer. Yeah, so yet another thing to look up online. What was the other thing I was going to look up? Oh, that Marilyn woman.
Yes.
Yes, we might have to... go ahead and read a poem so I can go look up stuff on the internet. unless you want to hear a short Grifters song.
Let's do the Grifters song.
Okay, here we go. Thank you. So what did we discover on the internet just now?
Mesmer was not a creep.
No, I think I got some lie from unnamed writer, and writer that shall not be named until later. Maybe it was someone else. And then we also discovered that the game show problem of Monty Hall was fixed, solved, it's probably the correct term, by Marilyn Vos Savant.
Very nice.
Yes. Of course, you probably discovered her name first.
Yeah, I did.
Because I didn't hear of anything about her at all until I didn't even know she existed until I read your poem. did you have a one you wanted to read? Or I could start name shows that are going to be going on soon. The thing is, there's nothing as far as I haven't been invited to anything until next month.
Okay.
I don't know if that means that I'm just not invited to them. Or if there's no poetry events going on until next month.
I don't know either. I feel like I'm always a last minute kind of girl. I show up at the last minute. I get a text message that says, "Where are you?" Then I show up. It's terrible. And thank you to all my friends who send me text messages.
Yeah, and my Facebook is not even going past, it's not going past March at all. So I'm not allowed to go to anything.
Oh, no.
Oh, well, I have a full life. I got to work on those stories, you know. So I have one you could read if you choose to do so. But if you want to choose a different one, that's completely fine. Go a different down a different door, through a different door.
You pick all the nerdy ones. It's good. These are the ones I never read.
Scale is not invariant.
Okay. This is scale is not invariant is pulled from a quote from Bruno Latour, who's a philosopher, French philosopher that I really like. And there's a footnote for the title, and it says, in quantum field theory, scale invariance has an interpretation in terms of particle physics. In scale invariant theory, the strength of a particle interaction does not depend on the energy of the particles involved. And so there's a whole series of dependencies there. And there's a quote for author totally unknown. It says, "I call her the devil because she makes me want to sin, and every time she knocks, I can't help but let her in." Poem. Turns out the devil is in the script. Turns out it's the song that makes you, little locust lung. Where you're at means nothing unless we know how far you're from. Only if you tell us. Only means anything if you say so. And so with where you're off to. Where you off to, little shark fin soup, little Dickinson? Can you sleep and dream? Can you shiver particle? Where are your limits?
Imagine they named a quark for Emily Dickinson.
That would be awesome.
You know where the name quark comes from, right?
No, tell me.
It's from Finnegan's Wake.
Really?
James Joyce came up with, I can't remember what word he's messing up. It's not that I've actually read Finnegan's Wake, because I have not. I've gotten past like the first sentence. And have you heard any of it or?
No.
It's written in three different languages at once, basically.
Wow. I'm totally reading that.
You want to hear it, I think. Anyway.
You have to just listen?
Yeah. Well, you have to know like all the different languages. It's not just three different languages. It's like a sentence will be in three different languages at once, and the next sentence is in three other languages.
What's the problem with that? Do you really have to know the meaning of a word to love the way it sounds?
No, I don't know. I just like, I kind of like meaning in my 400-page novels. Paul Celan, to his credit, you know, when he decided to destroy the German language as opposed to James Joyce, who decided to destroy the English language, Paul Celan decided to do it in like one-page poems. So, I mean, he has poems that are like in simultaneously like English, Romanian, German. They're supposed to be German, but like he uses, like he knew like 20 other languages, so he used all of them, and he was a Romanian Jew who survived the Holocaust. So kind of had a reason to destroy the German language. But, and yeah, I just thought that was a little, I don't know. I just have a hard time. Yeah. Anyway, I have digressed, you know. It's something like, instead of like a, he changed a word and it's quark instead of squark, or it's what seagulls do.
Squawk?
Yeah, instead of a squawk, it's like a quark. That's what they did. So someone, the guy who discovered, or one of the men or women who discovered quarks, the particles, knew Finnegan's Wake and pulled it from there, and that's why they're quarks.
Story.
Yeah,
what a
so
lovely story.
Where did, how did we get sidetracked on that?
I don't know. You brought it up. It's okay. Scale is not invariant.
Yes, we're talking about particle physics.
It's all
physics.
My fault.
Emily Dickinson. There needs to be the particle that can cure an atomic bomb. You like shoot particles at a ICBM and it makes it inert. That should be an Emily Dickinson.
That should. I love that.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to. Some sci-fi person's gonna have to steal it. So we have another. You have another poem. You want to? I'm just gonna randomly pick ones.
Sure. No, I've got one called Elevator, and this is about a fellow poet that you and I both know, but I won't tell you who.
Yeah, I didn't know who it was, so don't tell me.
Okay, great. So of course, there's a quote beforehand. It's from Rumi, from the Guest House. It says, "The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond." Poem. Insert here the beautiful geezer who watches birds and old movies, dog hair and slobber in her sweater, voice a twitch with diabetic recipes. She sits soft, pins in both knees. Basement level. We call this feeling grateful. It's a people rich kind of thing, a fortune telling kind of thing, where the company of kings is uncomfortably common. Ground floor, she is Groucho Marx without the cigar, and you are a shiny set of ears. First floor, doors open, she is talking. Here's the story of how you'll get through your divorce, one foot in front of the other, like your second and your third, if you have them. Fourth floor, doors open, how you'll grin at the world afterwards. 12th floor, doors shut, see now your son grows up. 57th floor, it's endless. And you take the train to California, and his girlfriend doesn't like you. Stop. Buy her flowers. Wait for the pins and the dogs and the birds.
Hmm. Yeah, I was just like, it's one of the ones that's really deep, and I don't know. It's just like, I don't know why things float over my head sometimes. It's like, I just want to say same as it ever was. Anyway. But yeah, that's a lot of this book is about the relationship and dealing with, you know,
life and death and the future and the past. Well, doors.
There's not a lot of death in the book, is there? I didn't feel death. Like there was a lot of death. There's a lot of, like, loss.
Oh, there's a death one.
Oh, you're going to prove me wrong, aren't you?
Yeah, but I have to find it. I'm sure you'll start. You'll talk about something and then.
No, let's go to the death poem.
Okay. this is part of a sister poem, but I'll just read the first one.
Okay.
It's called "A Curtain is a Door to a Lie That Tells the Truth." And there's a quote. It says, it's by Nancy Bird Turner. And it's from "Death is a Door." It says, "There is nothing to trouble any heart, nothing to hurt at all. Death is only a quiet door in an old wall." Insert here, your mentor, 5 feet tall, shoulders caved, drunk, dying. She's told you several times in a variety of ways, but you don't want to fortune tell. She is not a fortune teller. She is just a longtime chemo patient with a vodka tonic in her hand. She is just a genius. Poem. She says honesty is less like a door opening and more like a glorious show curtain letting go of the rafters, falling beautiful and rumpled. All that red velvet and silky golden rope, that elite regal feather fan becoming a lump of potatoes, the stage becoming just a place. It's dramatic, she says. It's an event. Zach Galifianakis would say that something honest often sounds dumb, and when you open your mouth with reverence, people would rather laugh than believe you. Zach isn't dying, though. He's delivering speeches at weddings and starting sitcoms with Louis C.K.
I forgot that one. You're right. Yeah, there's another one about... Yeah, there is a sister poem about that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's too bad. She was like a poetry mentor as well as just life.
She's a design research mentor. She's one of the smartest people I know. You want to hear the sister poem?
Yes.
Okay, it's called Hinge. And there's a quote by Pablo Neruda from Fable of the Mermaid and the Drunks. It says, her lips moved silent in a coral light, and suddenly she went out by that door. Poem. There's a picture of Marilyn on my bathroom sink, says morning every AM. It's old, but she's not in it. She's in a window, shutters flung open, holding her head in her little famous hand, a slinky smirk strung across her face like Christmas lights. Sometimes I think she's all about, what were you thinking last night? And sometimes, we both know you'll be fine. One eye behind the other, she's summing something up or summoning she's something is, was, wasn't she? So we've got this date every few minutes every day where we wax the unremarkable in our robes, my secondhand kimono, her bathy 50s fluff. I think she's pretty into me. Insert here, your mentor. Remember, she's dying.
I like that poem a lot. I liked it. I mean, it was weird because it had the connection with... I noticed the connection you had, or you kept bringing up Marilyn. Yeah, and it's... But at the same time, it's like about your morning ritual.
Yeah.
And how you get started, and that you have... This few minutes every day where you are able to get yourself started.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. And meanwhile, your mentor is dying.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get off the dark stuff.
Here, okay. So this is called The Trapdoor Spider is Like One of the Scariest Spiders. They in are the world.
Spiders are just terrifying. I can't deal with spiders.
The poem goes, unless you are watching that YouTube video where somebody has dubbed over a voice for the spider trying to hide himself. The fake French voice says, ha ha ha, ho ho ho. I will flatten my body and stretch out my legs and cover my face in sand. I cannot see you, so you cannot see me, so I'm hidden.
Yeah, they're scary no matter what.
No, it's so funny.
Oh, I'm sure it's funny.
Have you ever seen the videos of the dancing spiders? And they put their arms up really high. It's impossible to be afraid of them. They're like...
No, I don't like spiders. I just... Yeah, and I get it that they perform an important service of killing beautiful insects, but, you know, that eat crops and cause massive problems, but I prefer praying mantises.
I think those are really scary, too.
I don't think those aren't scary. Those are cool. They just like stand there, and the spiders make webs to get in my way. That's why my bias against them.
They do leave something behind.
That's I am pretty anti-spider. I hate to say it. I also hate gypsy moth caterpillars. You're not from the East Coast, so
no,
they haven't gotten here yet. Hopefully they never will.
Wolf spiders will chase you around the house. Those are creepy.
Which spiders?
Wolf spiders.
Oh, yeah, those guys. But they're not that big, though. I had a 20-minute
argument with a wolf spider in my living room.
Yeah. You're trying not to, you know.
I was trying to put a cup over the top of him, and he kept chasing me instead.
Yeah.
That was a problem.
Yeah, that's he doesn't, you know, a spider's got to know its limitations. Said Clint Eastwood. So we have time for a couple more poems, I think.
Can I end on one from my first book?
Yes, totally.
Okay. It's called Build. And it's about how falling in love is like moving into a new house. It sucks to do alone. For those of us who do it in pairs, one person usually has more junk than the other one. And when both people have a lot of junk, you need the help of some really good friends. You are usually more excited about these moves than your friends are, who are hoping that this will be the last time they have to help you move your heavy stuff from one place to another. Good thing love goes well with pizza and beer. When you're in love, it always seems like someone else's at first. At first, you never know where to put your stuff. Is this the bedroom or the kitchen? Do we do our laundry here or entertain ourselves? And then new, undiscovered corners of the house seem fun and interesting. Even if these were the same things you used to hate about other people's houses, or even your own. See, sometimes you find that you have only moved into a different version of the place that you just left. And no matter how hard you try to make it work, some places just aren't for you. Or your roommate, who decides to move on because they had unrealistic expectations of the house, or hated yard work, or couldn't stop seeing themselves in the houses down the street. Regardless, you may then find yourself trying to convince someone new to move into this place that you just can't leave. Such people, they're the same types to travel long distances to peer into their own old windows, expecting everything to be the same, except nobody really lives there anymore. I don't recommend this type of behavior, even if it leaves you destitute and homeless. In all probability, you will find somewhere new, and if you're lucky, really lucky, may you stumble on your perfect home unplanned, whether it's the one that you hardly see but learn to love all the same, or the one you learn to know in this constant, comfortable way with just enough places to grow old in and just enough sun on the front door. You'll learn to dance on the floor in your socks and go find a hiding cellar. You'll spend just the right amount of time tidying up and washing out the windows, sweeping out the closets, rearranging furniture. The process, it slows, but you never really stop moving in. At night, old familiar sounds will comfort even your most worn places.
You have been listening at Talking Earth. This is Patrick Bocard, and you've had the good fortune to be listening to Leah Noble Davidson and her poetry for the last hour. And I'd like to thank her for being a guest on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. This was lovely.
And she has her book middle of last year, Door, that is out in fine bookstores everywhere, as well as the Poetic Scientifica, which you just read that beautiful piece from. And I guess that's going to be the end of this week's edition of Talking Earth. Stay tuned for Gremlin Time.
Thank you. ball. They're playing basketball. We love the ball.
Nope. No March Madness here for us, but we do have our very own special bracket that we want you, the listeners of KBOO, to be part of. We'll be celebrating the melancholy March sadness this month, and we'd like you to contribute some music.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So just go to the KBOO website and search Diablo Sadness, enter some songs, and then come back later to vote. We'll be broadcasting the winners on March 24th.
Sounds like she's having a good time.
She's crying. It's backwards. Sort of makes me sad when I hear.